Welcome to the Gottesdienst crowd, where we foster confessional integrity, liturgical preservation, and preaching that doesn't stink. We believe the historic liturgy is more than mere cobwebs of antiquity. It is a true treasure of the church, to be dusted off and brought down from her attic to be enjoyed. So let's get dusting.
Welcome back to the Gottesdienst crowd. This is Jason Broughton, coming all the way from sunny but cool Tuscola, Illinois. Today we're talking about homebound visits and hospital calls, and in particular about reverence. Peepcorn, in The Conduct of the Services, says, "There is really only one basic rule of altar decorum. Be reverent. Every other rule is simply a practical amplification of this basic charge." And then he goes on and lists how to do that. He says, "To be reverent, we must first of all be humble. To be reverent, we must be prepared. And to be reverent, we must be calm." And it's one thing to be reverent in your own congregation sanctuary, the place that has been already set aside for that particular purpose. But it's another thing, or it can be difficult, to foster reverence in places where you don't have a whole lot of control. So today we're going to talk about how you are reverent where reverence seems to be lacking. And with us today, we have the Reverend Father Mark Braden, who is pastor of Zion Lutheran Church in Detroit, Michigan. He is also an editor of Gottesdienst and author of the recurring column, Taking Pains. Mark, welcome to the Gottesdienst crowd.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So how do you foster reverence where it seems that reverence is lacking? So when you go to make hospital calls, how do we foster reverence when you're not in your normal place? What do you do?
As you mentioned in the introduction, inside of our churches, the environment is very nicely appointed. We have the things that we need at hand. There is the expectation of reverence as our congregations come into the nave, and we are vested specially. All these things impart the sense of holiness that is appropriate to the divine service. When we find ourselves in a hospital room or next to a bed in a private home, you have buzzers going off, attendants coming in and out, phones ringing, deliveries coming, and all sorts of disruptions that one doesn't have when we're in the divine service, Lord willing, in our congregations, in the churches. So the first thing to remember, I think, with regard to reverence in the homebound call is that it is a divine service. We are bringing Holy Communion to a person that is infirm, homebound, sick, or dying. And the divine service is holy in itself. It is comprised of God's word and the rite, the rubric, the ceremony, the actions all point to Christ. And that brings a sense of reverence and holiness to the environment that would otherwise be quite pedestrian or quite disruptive.
So the first thing is just orienting oneself.
Orienting oneself in the environment, but I would speak to preparation and dress also.
Okay.
As we go for a homebound call or a sick call, we are exercising our office, and so we ought to be vested appropriately. We should have on our clerical collar. I usually wear a black suit. Many of the pastors do. In some settings, I think that a black sweater is a little more appropriate to the environment. sometimes when you're in a home and the person that you're calling on is, in pajamas and they're sick and they don't feel well, a sweater is a little softer interface than a suit jacket. But I'm always in a collar. I always have a pectoral cross on, and that helps them and those around them recognize that I am bringing Christ to that person. The preparation also involves the necessary things in the homebound communion kit, that you have a crucifix, that you have candles to use, that you have a small chalice, and certainly a cruet for wine and a cruet for water for ablutions. It should, in as much as possible, look like what you do at the altar in a smaller scale. And that also places the person inside of the divine service. And that is that bespeaks great reverence on the part of the pastor and on the part of the sick person. I think also in preparation, preparing by selecting appropriate propers to use. When I make homebound calls and sick visits, I use the Lutheran Common Service, and I do it from memory, but I always have a hymnal that I can hand to the person to follow if they are able to read or to follow. I have found that most of our members know the Common Service by heart, and if I start, "Beloved in the Lord, let us draw near," that they're very at home with the responses. This is one of the great benefits of the liturgy. As our members learn it, it is available to them, even if they're outside the church and they, even if they can't use the hymnal. They know the responses from years of worship in the inside of a sanctuary.
When you use the Common Service, do you chant any of the ordinaries, or do you just speak them?
I usually speak them responsively with the person, and if they can't answer, I give their answer. I give their response, but I always include at least one hymn, and sometimes, as silly as it sounds, I end up singing that hymn sitting next to them a cappella, and then sometimes they sing with me, but I always sing to them when I make a call, even if near the end of life and the person is clearly near death, even if I'm calling on them daily or twice a day, I always bring a hymn to sing. And I found that that's very well received, and it also brings the words of the hymn to them, which if properly chosen brings Christ to them. The transportation of the communion kit, we remember that these are vessels to be used in the divine service, and then in that respect, they are set aside for use in the divine service. So we treat them specially. We don't toss them in the trunk of our car. We transport them reverently. We make sure that they are cleaned as we would normally treat the chalice, the paten, the flagon, the other vessels of the divine service. And even in the preparation of that communion kit, there is reverence because we recognize that these vessels will bear the body and blood of Christ to someone who is in very much in need of it. I do begin with confession and absolution when I make my visit. And that frequently, just using the Common Service, the people have memorized the words. Our agendas offer alternate settings for confession and absolution, and the LSB agenda offers one where the person only has to answer yes. The pastor is prompting them, and all they have to say is yes. And that comes in very handy in the case that the person is tired or wafting in and out of a conscious state. That's helpful in preparation. Frequently, when I make hospital visits, I find that the people that I'm calling on are not in a private room. So if they're in a private room, you can go in, you can close the door or pull the door near closed, and that's a signal to everyone out in the hall that you know, you're going to be praying and reading the Holy Scriptures to them, bringing communion to them. In the case where it is a semi-private room, where there's another bed or more than one bed, I frequently ask the other occupants of the room for permission to turn their televisions off or down, so that I can minister appropriately to the person that I've come to visit. I do find that that's very well received, mostly, and that sometimes they'll be interested in me pulling back the curtain between the beds and actually watching what I do and hearing my words. And this is a wonderful way for them to hear the gospel as well.
Yeah, I've often found that in my own hospital visits, when they're sharing a room, that many times the roommates will join in the Lord's Prayer and the Nicene Creed and things like that also.
Yes, I too have seen that. And I think that's a wonderful opportunity for us to bring the gospel to people that we wouldn't normally have access to. But at the same time, our focus is on our member, who is very much in need of what we bring. So I do begin with the private confession and absolution. And if the person is able or needs to hold a hymnal, I usually have a hymnal with me. Otherwise, we have the ability to prompt them simply to answer yes at the end of the kind of paraphrased confession that's in the LSB agenda. And I do take care as I prepare inside of the space, whether that's next to a bed, whether I'm doing it at a kitchen table in a home where I'm visiting a sick or homebound person, whether I'm doing it on a tray over a hospital bed, I do take care to clear a good-sized space to set up the communion. I remove articles from the table. I make sure the table is clean. I bring a corporal, and I put a corporal down so that we've set aside that space for use in what is a divine service, and that there aren't any distractions or pop cans or things like that on the table. So preparing the space, I think, is very important. If it's in a hospital setting, I will let the nurses at the desk know that I am going to have Holy Communion with the person and ask them, you know, if it's at all possible, you know, just don't come in until I open the door again. And they are generally very respectful of that. The time that I find that it doesn't work is during morning and afternoon rounds. If there's a physician coming in doing rounds, they'll walk right in. But most of the time, the doctors are very respectful, and they'll either stand there and then go away and come back or give me a chance to get to a place where I can pause and let them come in and do what they need to do. And then frequently when I call on people that are institutionalized for a long period of time, especially people that are in facilities for Alzheimer's or just long-term medical care, sometimes you actually have to move their wheelchair to a different space. You'll go to make the visit, and the attendant will have taken them down to lunch, you know, at 10:30 in the morning because they try to encourage them to socialize. And so when you get there, they're at a table with six other people. And in those cases, I tend just to ask for permission to take the member back to a more private space, whether that's a conference room or their room, to establish a reverent environment in which to continue with the rite. I do set up communion very much as I would on an altar, even if it's just on a tray table or on the nightstand. On a kitchen table, and that is clearing a large space using a corporal. I put wine in a chalice. I put a purificator over the mouth of the chalice. I put the paten, the necessary host on top of that, and then a pall over that. and then a colored veil. And then I also always have a bottle of water for ablutions set off of the corporal to prepare for the service. And then I typically just talk through with them what we're going to do. Those who are sick for long periods of time, they know exactly what to expect. But those who have recently become ill, they're generally quite happy that you're going to go through a service with them, and that the structure of that service will be very much what they're used to from Sunday morning. That brings them comfort, and they enjoy that very much. Even if they can't participate completely, they haven't been in church for a while, and that in a real way brings church to them, and they appreciate that and enjoy it.
Now take me through, if you would, the ceremonies that you incorporate. Are you standing for a majority, or does that depend on the setting? Do you elevate as well as genuflect? Take me through some of those things so as to give us a picture of how you bring reverence and what ceremonies you incorporate into your homebound visits.
I do. In the hospital room, if the member is in a bed, I do stand, and I stand for the rite. I don't typically genuflect during the rite. If I am in a living room or at a kitchen table, I seat myself across from the person, and I don't typically stand. So I adjust that according to the setting, I guess. In the hospital rooms, the beds are elevated, and I find that raising the tray table to its highest position and using that, standing behind it, looking across the elements to the member, is the best way to do that. And depending on the number of cords tubes that are involved, sometimes I'll change sides, and I'll be very close to them as I do most of the rite, as I read the scriptures to them, and then I'll go to the other side to the communion setup, depending on how the room is set up.
Now, you mentioned in your communion kit that you always have a corporal, obviously your purificator. You bring water for ablution. Are you doing just the ablution of the vessels after your service is completed? Or are you also doing the ablution that you would normally do during the service of your hands?
Yeah, so this continues on your question about ceremony. I do go through the rite very much as I would at an altar. I do elevate. I do make the sign of the cross over the chalice, which has the blood of our Lord in it, with the body of our Lord at the Pax Domini. And I do, after communing the member and after receiving communion myself, which I do, I usually commune the member first and then myself, which is the reverse of what I would do at an altar. At the altar, I commune myself first. But then if there is any consumption to be done, I do that right there in front of them. And then I do, after I have given them the dismissal, I do the ablution right in front of them with the water cruet, and I consume the water. I wipe out the chalice with the purificator. I reassemble the stack, as it were, the chalice with the purificator. I leave the purificator that's been in contact with the blood of Christ inside the chalice, and then when I put that away in my communion kit, that lets me know, that's a sign to me, that when I get back to the church, that I have to do a second ablution. But I do very much what I do on Sunday mornings, to the extent that that's possible. And as I'm setting up, I talk to the member if they may have questions, or I can just make comments on what I'm doing. And at the same time, when I'm taking down, I speak to them about what I'm doing and how I'm transporting the vessels, and that the wine that remains that is unconsecrated is wine, and I place that back in my communion kit, which does bring up the question of the use of reliquiae versus consecration in front of the member. And there is a long history in the church and very early attestation to the practice of taking reliquiae from the tabernacle or ombre in the chancel of the church, and using the body and blood of Christ that have been consecrated, rather than consecrating anew in front of the member by taking elements that have not been consecrated. I tend to do the latter, even if there are reliquiae in the chancel. I tend to take elements that are not consecrated and consecrate in front of the member. And I don't in any way speak against men that take reliquiae, because I think there's a great history to that, and is certainly has been a practice in the Christian church for many, many centuries.
Yeah, and even in Lutheranism, it was it still was happening in the early 16th and mid-16th centuries. The church orders bear witness to this, but mainly for the congregations in the city versus the congregations in the country, because the...
Right, where you could process after the Mass and take the elements right to them, exactly. Mm-hmm. But my personal practice is I do consecrate in front of the member, and they hear me speak the Verba Domini in the same way that I have spoken the Verba Domini on Sunday in the church.
Now, for those who would take the reliquiae, what is the practice then when you would have the consecration? Do you do it any differently?
Yes, I think you have to. Were I to do that, I would let the member know as I was setting up that I had brought elements from the church that are the body and blood of Christ. And I would probably restate that right before the Verba Domini in the rite. I would say that this is the body and blood of Christ. On Sunday morning, these words were spoken over these elements, and then I would say the Verba Domini. And I think that's not wrong at all. I'm not speaking against that. It's just personally, I tend to take unconsecrated elements and consecrate them. And in the same way, the confession and absolution is different when you're doing a homebound communion. In the church on Sunday morning, if you begin with Beloved in the Lord, then you're going to begin by saying, upon this your confession. And when you are doing an individual communion and you have heard a confession, then that isn't necessary. It's simply I by virtue of my office. That's enough, because there's no conditionality to that confession. That's a private confession, which is quite different than what is heard on Sunday morning.
You mentioned a kit and what you include with it, and I kind of wanted to go back to that. Take us through exactly what you have in your homebound visitation kit, like everything to the detail, and whether or not you have purchased that kind of piecemeal and assembled it yourself, or whether you actually suggest a particular communion kit or homebound kit from, one of the money changers like CM Almy or something like that.
Yes, I am on my third or fourth homebound communion kit since ordination. And at each turn, I have purchased a complete kit. I have used a kit from Almy, the the one that comes in the wooden box with the little chalice and all the pieces with the a tray that removes on the top and the folding small stole. I currently am using one from Ziegler's Catholic Supply, which is available on the web. Not that I intend to do a commercial for them, but that's the one that I'm using. And rather than a box orientation, it looks a little more like a briefcase.
Okay.
It stands up. And inside of that, there is a removable gold, they call it an altar. It's just a large, stiff piece of cloth with gold fabric that you place on the surface before you put the corporal down. And then I carry purificators and a corporal, paten, the pall to cover the paten. I do carry a white and a gold veil. And then, obviously, the chalice, a wine cruet, a water cruet. The ones that I currently have, I got on the internet from Italy, so they say acqua e vino on them. the water cruet I leave out, and I place that off of the corporal that would be later used for ablution. I have a small pyx, but I tend not to use the pyx during the rite when I do homebound communion. Rather, I place the host on the paten and put the pall on it over the chalice. But I have the pyx out. And then I do have a small stole that's reversible white and violet. But if I can do it, I prefer to take a regular stole. And not a preaching stole, a long one, but rather the stole of the length that the celebrant would wear, so that when I'm seated, if I'm seated in a chair or on a sofa or at a kitchen table, that the stole doesn't touch the ground. They do sell shortened stoles for homebound calls, but I haven't made that purchase. Obviously, I have a Bible. I have an agenda. And it may date me just a little bit, but I do use the Pastor's Companion, the black small agenda from Lutheran Hymnal. And if I take hymnals, I take Lutheran Hymnal because our people are very accustomed to that. And I think that would be the criteria, is the divine service that your people know, that's the one to take.
And you do the service straight through, or do you cut any? Do you cut like the Gloria, or?
Well, for a ferial mass in any setting, the Gloria and the Creed can be omitted. That's a May rubric. I don't speak the Gloria in Excelsis when I'm doing a homebound call. I do speak the Creed, and I think that that's an important part of the call, because that confession is indicative of the faith of the member, and that's a confession that they've been making for their entire life. So I know several of the men, back to your question, several of my brothers actually do buy individual components and for a communion kit, and they build it. One of the brothers that I'm aware of finds that a camera bag, a bag that's made for a 35 millimeter or digital SLR with all the little foam inserts and pockets, works very well for the transportation of the communion kit. So I don't think it's necessary to buy a kit that's prepared. You can buy the components and use something like a black camera bag. I think it is important, especially if you're going to be transporting reliquiae, that the elements are treated reverently, that they are placed inside of a pocket, but also with a purificator around them to veil them, and so that when they're moved, that they are veiled when they are moved, just like you would do in a church. That is the body and blood of Christ. And veiling those elements is appropriate.
Now, how often do you visit those who are just normally homebound? And then secondly, those who are hospitalized?
I have a monthly schedule for our homebound. And so I set aside a week during the month that I make our homebound visits in. Now, that said, Zion at this point in time doesn't have that many homebound. We go between, you know, 4 or 5 members to 7 or 8 members, and that's easily accomplished in a week where there isn't a lot of other activity. When someone gets sick, I try to go to the hospital immediately. And then, depending on their condition, I do daily calls. If they are near death, I try to see them in the morning and then in the afternoon. And one of the things that I have found very helpful, especially if the member is near death, is the family is typically in the room most of the time. So I take a stack of hymnals and I show the family how to use the morning and evening suffrages in the Lutheran hymnal, and also how to use the litany. And I show them how to find the propers, and I encourage them in the morning and in the evening to pray the suffrages with their family member. And then when I'm there, we do a communion liturgy, and I include them to the extent that they are communicants, members of our church body. And that inclusion of family is incredibly important to them and to the member. It also creates a bridge for the pastor to minister to the family at that time and after the sainting member has been taken to heaven. And then also it gives you a great connection to begin funeral planning. So your question was, how frequently do I visit? Our homebound members, I visit monthly, unless they are sick or hospitalized, and then I'll visit them immediately if I can, more frequently if necessary. Someone that is near death daily and frequently in the morning and in the late afternoon. The hospitals are between the home where I live with my family and our parish. So stopping at the hospital on the way in and stopping at the hospital on the way back home is convenient, and it serves the purpose for pastoral care.
And that might be different for pastors like me, who are 45 minutes away or a half an hour away from a hospital, might not be able to swing the twice a day. But certainly at certain points, a daily visit isn't that difficult for a pastor with a vehicle to go travel a half an hour to preach God's word and administer the sacraments for those who are about to be sainted.
Yes, I agree. I agree completely. I am in an urban setting, and that makes it a little more easier in some respects. In other respects, a lot of times when one of our members becomes ill or needs to be put into a long-term care facility, the family has moved an hour and a half north or an hour and a half south, and they want the member by their house for their convenience. At the same time, pastorally, the pastor desires to call on that member, and the member wants their own pastor. They don't want to be, farmed off to a local pastor if you can avoid that. So I do have one member that is over an hour north of the church, and I have one member that's a good 40 minutes south of the church. But those are on a monthly visitation schedule. I'm sure this is true of most ordained men, but I always feel badly that I'm not able to visit them more frequently.
Yes, there is no shortness of guilt, you know, whether it's real or perceived, when you can't see your members as often as you would like to.
And you can read the joy on their face. Even our members that are homebound for a long period of time, you know, the gals will put on a necklace and earrings, and dress up just a little bit because the pastor's coming. And you can see that it's important to them, and you can see the comfort that that visit brings to them, the comfort that they receive in the receipt of the gifts of God, the body and blood of Christ, the word, the Holy Gospel. This brings them strength and comfort. And as the pastor sees that, it brings joy to the pastor. That's the fruit that God gives from his gifts. You never tire of that. I guess one thing that would be worth commenting on, you had asked about someone that's near death. Frequently, you end up visiting daily or every other day or however frequently, but that may be for an extended period of time. And there are some resources to use so that your visits don't become stale with regard to the propers. The first comment I would make is when I make a homebound or a sick call, I use the propers for the upcoming Sunday. And that gives me the chance some weeks to six or seven times go through the readings for the upcoming Sunday and preach homilies bedside that focus on different parts of those readings. And on a week where I'm going to make a number of homebound visits, by the time I get to Friday, I've pretty well got my sermon structure in place, and I've had a chance to read through those texts a number of times. I also include the propers such as introit, gradual, alleluia, offertorium, and communio, the historic propers, which are based on psalms largely, because they pair with the gospel based on their theology. And you can preach the introit. You can read the introit and preach it. And the Psalter is a rich resource for calling on the sick and infirmed in their homes. Our agenda, and I use that in the plural, include multiple readings, both for homebound visits and then in the LSB agenda and the pastoral companion for much more situational, much more focused visits. And those are very helpful. For extended visitation, if I'm going to be visiting every day for quite a period of time, the Lutheran hymnal has a daily lectionary. And that's very helpful to simply take the appointed reading and then preach it contextually, bring that reading to bear on the member to whom you're ministering. And then we do have a couple of really good resources that are used for daily devotions. Father Bernal Eckert's book, Every Day I Will Bless Thee, has daily devotions that he has selected, kind of a lectio continuum, and he provides lessons and then a brief homily. The homilies are outstanding. But I tend rather to preach a homily myself, but I will use the daily lessons. And also for those who are converted to the three-year lectionary, there is the Treasury of Daily Prayer. That is a good resource for a daily lectionary if you're going to be, 4 weeks of daily calls. That way the calls stay fresh, as it were, and it gives you the opportunity to preach a homily on a new text each day.
Now, you mentioned that with regard especially to the homebound, how often it is the case that the members that we visit who are homebound just light up when pastor comes. They will get ready, do their hair and makeup probably with a little more attention than they might normally. And oftentimes I found that we're one of the few visits they get in a month. How much time do you set aside in your visits with the homebound, for lack of a better way of saying it, small talk or chit chat, just to see how they're doing and talk with them?
My typical visit will be 35 to 40 minutes of bringing them Holy Communion, the use of the liturgy, a brief homily, touching on the lessons. And then I always allow time, 15 or 20 minutes, to talk about what it's like outside, what happened at church this week. We just finished renovating our front stairs at Zion. Tell them about the front stairs. Tell them about upcoming events. Talk about who was in church on Sunday. Who sat next to their old seat. These are the kinds of things that they love to hear and really connect them with the congregation. In the same vein, I also have a weekly mailing to all of our homebound and infirm, and that includes my sermon from Sunday. My sermon, we have a regular Wednesday Mass. My sermon from Wednesday, the bulletin from that Sunday, and our newsletters as they're published go out. So we try to continue to connect with our homebound, even if I'm not calling on them that week. They're going to receive two sermons to read, the bulletin to read, which includes our prayer list, and most of those people they know, and it includes our calendar, church calendar. So they mm-hmm. feel connected to the congregation in that way. The question of whether you do chit-chat before
yeah, or I was just going to ask you that.
Communion. I like to get right into the divine service. That's why I'm there. So I tend to greet them, shake their hand, give them a hug if it's appropriate. You tell them I'm glad to see them, ask them how they are, and then I will just say, let's take a moment and leave the world behind and let's receive the gifts of God together in the divine service. And then I'll prepare the table and then have Holy Communion. But afterwards, I do sit and talk, ask them about their family, if there are family members in the room, talk with them about how they're doing, answer questions if they have them. So I think that's important. We love these members in Christ. And part of that love is the recognition that they're not connected with their friends and their neighbors, the other members of the congregation. And as you say, sometimes there are only one or two people in a month that come and visit them. And they get a little clingy when it's time to go. And the pastor experiences this frequently. But I think just spending time with is important, but at the same time, I wouldn't make that much more than 15 or 20 minutes.
How do you handle like major interruptions, things like accidents or a phone rings during the divine service portion of your visit? Do you just pause or how do you do that? How do you maintain reverence, but also recognize, I shouldn't just power through this?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, if I'm in a hospital room and the phone rings, I will briefly pause and ask the member, do you want to answer that? And if they say yes, then I just stop, let them take that call, and then go on. Most of the time, the member will say no. Our people recognize the importance of the divine service and the presence of Christ in it, the otherworldly, the unearthly nature, huh? the heavenly nature, and they would much prefer just to go on with the divine service. If a physician comes in and must interrupt, I'll stop, and then I'll back up and pick up whatever the previous ordinary or proper was when they're done to start again. Sometimes that's unavoidable, that's very situational. If I can avoid stopping, I will. If I have to stop, I will, just reverently step back. If it's on a bedside table, I will actually move the communion setup away so that that person can come in and do what they have to do. And then I'll move the communion setup back and then back up one proper or ordinary and start from where I had left off. That's very difficult. And I think it's very situational.
Well, Mark, is there anything that I've forgotten?
Of course you've done an excellent job. One thing I would note is that when I make a homebound visit or a hospital room visit, I always leave a record of that visit. I take one of my business cards and I put it on the chart, or I put it, the clip chart at the foot of the bed, or on the whiteboard next to the bed, or I leave it on the table where the family pictures are. And I'll just write on the card, visited, and then the date and the time, because I think it's important that the family knows that you're there and that you're calling on them and that they have your contact information. And I've had a family member pocket the business card or put it in their purse and then call me because they had that card when their relative became sicker or they needed me. And I think leaving a record of the call is important. And then just keeping a little list back in your office of the last time you saw them, because if you have, six or seven homebound, it's easy to forget somebody. And of course, the topic was reverence. And just kind of in summary, we approach a homebound call no differently than we approach the divine service at the altar in our parish. We recognize that Christ is present. We vest appropriately. Our conduct is appropriate. We do our best to create an environment that allows for reverence. We do approach that humbly and calmly. We do take pains to include as many of the rubrics as we can, because rubrics always point to Christ. In bringing that comfort to our homebound members, we bring Christ to them. And that is the same Christ that they will soon see face to face, and then also enjoy in bliss and felicity for eternity. That division between the church here and the church in glory is a little bit less prominent in the hospital room or when you're calling on a homebound person.
Well, thank you for your time and for all of this advice. This is just wonderful. Be reverent, which means recognize who you are and who you represent, that you are a minister, but a minister of Christ. Be prepared. Have your ducks in a row. Don't leave things to the last minute. And be calm, because interruptions will surely come. And how you respond will set the tone for how those you serve respond. Thank you for your time, Mark. We really appreciate it.
Oh, glad to be with you. Blessings to you.
All right, take care.
Thank you.